Welcome to another episode of Scepter Publishers Podcast. Today we have a special episode with author Kevin Wells, who wrote our newest title, Coached by the Curé. Welcome, Kevin.
Katie, it's great to be with you.
Yeah, so tell us, why don't you just start from the beginning and tell us a little bit, what inspired you to write this book? What is your interest specifically in the Curé of Ours? And we can go from there.
Well, the background briefly is Meredith Koopman reached out to me a number of years ago and asked if I would be interested in writing Coached by the Curé. Interested in writing just a book in the Coached by series.
Okay.
And I guess at the time, I think I was writing another book, and then another book came along, I'm a big fan of Catholic priests. I grew up in the shadow of a paragon in Washington, D.C., Monsignor Thomas Wells, my dad's brother. And if you line up 100 priests in a row in Washington, D.C. today and say, tell us about Monsignor Wells, they'd say the guy's a legend. And I'm not saying this coming as I'm his nephew, but he just shipped men into the priesthood. He Wow. shipped men into seminaries. He came out of the birth canal explosively joy-filled, and he filled that with his love for the Eucharist and Mary. So he was an explosive priest, and he's just well known here. And he was murdered in his rectory in the year 2000. Mm-hmm. It's quite a story. We won't get into it on this podcast, but I was actually with him a few nights before his murder, and after his death, I began to, as an old journalist, I used to be a Major League Baseball writer. I used to earn my living professionally as a journalist. I began to sense that there was great trouble in the church. And this was even before the 2002 Boston scandals. And then that popped. And then there was never really any true penitential sackcloth and ashes moment from bishops and priests to admit they just kept it seemed more vocabulary and words and committees rather than shame on us. Mm-hmm. This sensus fidei in me kept bubbling up. I'm like, what's going on? I never understood our church to be this dark, darkened by sin. And then right around 2009, I had invasive brain surgery. I had a failed brain surgery. I had an aneurysm. And when I survived, and I shouldn't have, but I did because I had failed brain surgery. But when I came out, that's when I came out changed. And there was more of a pull to you should begin to really obliging this thing that's been churning and burning in your soul and look at the church more deeply. And so I began to write articles and books about the priesthood and Katie, and you know, I'm too far afield. I'm too long winded here, but I'll say this. So I finished a book, this past fall, called The Hermit, through Ignatius Press. And it got out there pretty good. I think it's still selling pretty good, But I thought, like, well, you know, your last four books all centered around holy priests, a saint, Monsignor Wells, a hermit. You know, you wrote about some of the greatest titans in the history of the church that were priests, Colby, Bosco, Damien the Leper, mm-hmm. et cetera. And you know what, Kevin? Leave them alone. Walk away from the ministerial priesthood. And I thought, in my crazy Irish imagination, you know what I'm going to do? I'm not only going to leave them alone, I'm going to pull the patron saint of all parish priests from the grave, mm-hmm. and I'm going to bring him to life in 2025. And I'm going to have him look across the landscape of the West. And I'm going to allow him to address it. And then after I pulled him out of the grave and began to pray on John Vianney, and I began to read his biographies, I said, no, he wouldn't address priests and bishops. Because he would be canceled. He would be canceled within a year or so of his priesthood in 2025 because he would be preaching against moral laws. He'd be preaching against mortal sin, the complementarity of the sexes, marriage, contraception. So he'd be seen as a madman. And so I said, you know what he's going to do? He's going to leave them behind, bishops, clergy, the ministerial priesthood, and he's going to do something, in my estimation, far, far, far more important. And he's going to address parents, moms and dads, travailed that they've lost their children to the world. They've left the faith. So John Vianney, in my book, Coached by the Cure, speaks specifically to moms and dads and coaches them up into ways into protecting their children in this moral winter time, and even bringing back their children who have left the faith. So he kind of becomes the coach to moms and dads to sort of settle their unsettled nerves.
Sure, absolutely. And I think it's beautiful because I think a lot of parents do feel this, right? You talk to, you know, people who are in their 40s and 50s and 60s, and some of their children have left, or they're no longer practicing, or, you know, I know my grandma's 95 and she despairs over the grandkids that are no longer practicing or married outside of the church. So in your research and in writing this, how did you find that the Curé of Ars was a really good person to go to for parents? Because he's not normally seen as that, right? Like the parish priest goes to him, those with, you know, religious vocations. But how did you see that he would really help the parents today?
Ah, great question, Katie. So what happens is, in my book, is there's this crazy conversation that takes place in heaven in chapter one, where John Vianney's muse, Philomena, the martyr Philomena, gathers some of the greatest priest saints in history, and they have a very frank conversation. And at the end of it, their conversation is about the major issues in the ministerial priesthood. I won't go into them now, but they're very frank. They're very open. And God is standing nearby, wordless. He's not stopping the conversation. He's just kind of like listening and say, continue. So at the end of the conversation, Philomena tells John Vianney, your name has changed. You are no longer the patron saint of the parish priests because you'd be canceled. You are now the patron saint of the domestic home. You must teach moms and dads how to be priests in their homes. So you're right, Katie. He wasn't always seen as somebody who was, let's say, paternal or a dad-like figure. But the root of it is, my goodness, he was, because all he cared about was the state of his flock's souls in Ars, France. So that's why he actually has sort of opened the door, the front door of homes throughout the West, to say, can I come in? Because I want to sort of warm your troubled hearts, warm your agonized minds about your children, and bring peace to it. So he comes in as a very paternal figure in this book.
I've only read the first chapter, so I can't wait to read the rest of it to see how all of this plays out. I know in the book you really emphasize humility as kind of foundational to Vianney's sanctity and all of that. Tell us a little bit more about that and how that also applies to parenting and that today.
Yeah, I mean, we know, well, humility, I think Aquinas called humility the queen of all virtues, and who's going to disagree with Aquinas?
True.
But he was on it, because without humility, everything just breaks apart and falls to the floor. Because if you're not going to put yourself last, then you're always going to sort of infect, maybe in small measures, how you treat others throughout the day, because you're always sort of looking at yourself a little bit. So John Vianney, who was radically humble, and hopefully your listener will purchase the book to see the different stories of how he manifested it. But I think it's so important for parents, for me as a parent, to always, as long as my children are in the home and my wife Chris is in the home, to always do my best to put myself last. So it's God, Krista, children. And I'm way there at the bottom of the totem pole. I'm the foundation below the foot. You can't even see me.
Yeah.
So that's hopefully that's where John Vianney actually starts the book. Like, I couldn't have done any of this in Ars. And by the way, very quick, Katie, for your listener, Ars was spiritually dead. So John Vianney was sent to a town that was spiritually gone. And within 15, 20 years, he had turned it all back to a town of willing saints. So, and I think he led the way through his humility.
I think that example is so helpful, especially to parents, right? Because you look at your family and you might be like, oh, they're so far. And here's, you know, the curé who shows up and ours is nothing, right? There's little faith. And then in 15 years with his prayer, with his humility, with his sacrifice, with his work, he turns it around, right? And so I can imagine that would be a good example for parents as well, who are looking at their kids and maybe losing hope a little bit, right? They've been praying for a while. They're like Saint Monica, and they're like, but I'm not seeing a Saint Augustine coming out of this. So, but that might be really encouraging for them.
Yeah, it's you're right. You brought something up there that I'm glad you did. There's not a whole lot of so Monica begs and pleads for 20, 30 years for a St. Ambrose, and there was plenty of them floating around, but there's not as many anymore. Matter of fact, there's very few. I'll be bold enough to say. Because the youth culture, whether you're in college, post-college, or young adults, there's less and less Catholics really taking their faith seriously. Obviously, there's many out there, but so yeah, I think moms and dads, knowing this, with their children still in the home, they have to say to themselves, you know what I need to do right now, because I'm not quite sure. I see my son or daughter sort of being pulled into the world, sucked into the sense phenomena of whatever. Instagram, Taylor Swift, just silliness, fashion, YouTube videos, being an influencer. I think mom and dad would want to say to themselves, I think, at least I say it to myself, Kevin, you must die. Like, you must die to everything. So your kids might have a heartbeat's chance to see, sort of in an intangible way, that you're dying to themselves, dying to yourself, so you can love them more and give more of yourself. So that's sort of the root of humility, is just forget about yourself and do what you can to protect those around you, especially your children.
Right, which is so countercultural to what we hear today. Treat yourself, put yourself first, right? Self-care is so important. And not that self-care isn't, you got to take care of yourself, right? To be able to serve others, but this constant messaging of treat yourself, have another Starbucks, you've had a bad day, have another Starbucks, you've had a good day, right? Whatever is kind of countercultural to say, no, actually, put yourself last, put your kids, put your wife, put God first. And work that way.
Yeah, just one line on that I want to throw on that is, society, modern society, sees suffering as purposeless. It has no meaning whatsoever. But over and over and over in scripture, you hear it from Paul, Peter, you hear it, you see it live in concert with Jesus bleeding out on the cross. Suffering has enormous consequence, and is redemptive suffering that the parents would be willing to take on that can really save the soul of their children.
Yeah, and I mean, this we're recording this episode just before Holy Week. It will air just after Holy Week, but the perfect example of what we experience and go through during Holy Week, that we accompany our Lord along that passion, and that's what brought us redemption. That's what got us, heaven. Beautiful. In chapter three, you talk about kind of the challenge of staying faithful amid kind of spiritual confusion. What kind of practical advice do you give, maybe in that chapter or just in general from you having written this, would you give to parents who are kind of feeling this spiritual confusion, or maybe their kids are, or that kind of spiritual fog that they go through?
Well, it's everywhere, and I'll just say it. I've believed strongly, and as the days go by, I believe it even more strongly, is that after COVID 2020 finally left us, one thing never did, and that was the choruses of demons. I think if in a supernatural way, if we could actually see the spiritual world, like spiritual warfare, and we look to the blue skies above right now, and we could see it, we would see black flapping wings everywhere. And I don't know if it's because of the moratorium on the masses or the sacraments that the church imposed, which I found stunning. I was firmly against that, but at that time, it was almost like Satan whistling to his demons, saying, "Hey, man, they're not even trying anymore. Go in." Well, I think that these demons are anchored above the world now, and they're pressing in deeper. So this fog, this poison is everywhere now. I really believe that. I mean, I don't know, because I can't see, but I tell you what, do I hear stories from friends, family, coworkers about revolting things, gruesome things that have happened to their families themselves, just this nightmare of pain they're in. So what I would, to answer your question, Katie, what I would propose for maybe your listeners that are kind of trapped in this fog, is is number one, open up the best you can communication more deeply with your spouse. If you have, if you're married, and say, honey, I'm feeling this, I need your help. And maybe your spouse say, well, I didn't really know this. Oh yeah. It's burying me alive. Like, I don't know what to do with this, honey. I need your help. And at the same time, of course, you're intensifying this friendship with God, and you're praying more. I don't care if you, like, there's no excuses in my opinion. Like, you can make a million excuses and they're justified. Like, oh, I'm too busy to pray more, or my kids, I got six kids or whatever. Like, we always have tasks, but there is not a single excuse that any of us have, including me, the guy, the big mouth speaking right now, that can't get up a half hour to an hour earlier every day to fall into deeper measures of prayer. And for me, it's been contemplative prayer. I think I've really sort of increased more of that in my life since COVID. So I would intensify prayer life, because it is, God says this over, or Jesus says this over and over again. If you come to me, I will come to you. My Father will not deny you. My Father will come to you. So it's been through contemplative prayer the past 5, 6 years where I've gotten an answer every now and then. Maybe it's just a word that truly, in a practical way, has helped me through this fog.
Sure, absolutely. I think, you know, your point about COVID and what that did, I think is really interesting. I think there was an episode of The Exorcist Files where they were saying that it's harder to do exorcisms now. Like, it takes more to get, because, and their theory is kind of the same, we were removed from the sacraments for so long, and people became very lukewarm, and now the demons are just more solidly in place than they were before. And so, yeah, it's definitely interesting to look at. So for our listeners who are, you know, who are listening to this and hearing this and thinking like, okay, I do need to take steps for myself to grow in holiness. I mean, you mentioned waking up 30 minutes earlier to do prayer. What could other kind of first steps be for them? Maybe like just like the Curie of Ars did, or using him as an example, or things from the book that you suggest for them?
Well, just to answer your first question, the first thing I would do is begin every day to incorporate some spiritual reading into your life. There's something about reading about the lives of the saints, or just what modern day theologians or writers, Catholic writers, that really warms our soul. And we often get some insights that we hadn't previously considered. Yeah. And I'll double down on that by saying that when John Vianney actually made it to Ars in 1818, you know, he was sent there, by the way, Katie, because he was considered back then a strange, an odd bird, a strange guy, a guy who failed out of seminary 3 times. And the bishop said, well, what's the least damage that can happen in this, you know, backwater Ars? So let's send Vianney there because he's the odd bird. And so he went there and he saw just a devastated land of farmers who weren't going to church. And he said, well, what do I do? So he began to read nightly the lives of the saints. And there wasn't a day in his life where he didn't stop refreshing himself nightly by reading the lives of the saints. So that's what I would encourage. I could throw out 20 things right now, but I'll just stick with, to a listener, just begin to really get into some good Catholic books.
And we didn't even prompt him to say that from Scepter, but we agree, spiritual reading, right? Definitely, definitely important. So for St. John Vianney, also, he had a great love for the Eucharist and he heard a lot of confessions, right? That's one of the things that he is most known for. So can you tell us a little bit about what you learned about him along the lines of those two sacraments, and then, you know, how they could also help our listeners?
Well, yes, you hit on sort of the heartbeat, the two heartbeats of his life. Well, he had a few more, but but those two were big. Again, when he landed in Ars, he understood, man, I got a lot of work to do. These people can't stand me. Some of the previous priests in Ars, were not so good. We'll just leave it at that. I kind of get into it in the book, but he had a lot of work to do. So what he began to do was spend hour after hour after hour in front of the monstrance at this little, poor, meager, beat up church called St. Sixtus that nobody was visiting. But he knew once he exposed Jesus Christ in the monstrance, and you know, that sort of became like his hermit, like the first pew of St. Sixtus was like his hermit cell. That's where he just lived and beg God, beg Jesus, you know, in the flesh, hey, I need your help here. I'm struggling. And as time went by, you know, some folks began to come to Mass, and he began to hear their sins. And after a few years, he began to read their souls. And became famous, really throughout France and even Europe as the years went by for being a connoisseur of souls. And they actually, I think your listener will find this fascinating. They actually built a new train line, from Lyon to Lyon, France, just so people can board the train and take this walking pilgrimage to Ars.
Wow.
To lay their eyes on this uncommon priest who could, they were told, could read their souls. So after 20, 25 years, he was hearing confessions daily from 12 to 14 hours.
Wow.
So he understood that it was in confession that he could pluck out the little monsters, the little mortal sin monsters, and speak truth to what he saw was corrupt in their soul and say, hey, if this goes on anymore, you're probably not going to make it to our Lord. So that's why Satan despised him,
mm-hmm.
is because he was stealing so many of the souls from hell.
Absolutely. I'm wondering, as you were writing this, were there any stories that kind of stood out to you that you can share with us? Don't give away anything big from the book, but was there anything that you were like, oh, I didn't know this about him, or it was kind of a new insight for you?
I could, Katie, 1,000 stories.
Okay, of course.
Yeah, but I guess so. A couple, just two that come to mind. The one that I absolutely, absolutely love, and it turns back to humility, is when John Vianney came to Ars, he was preaching prophetically very strongly about the sin that had built up. So there was like a cabaret. There was three bars. Let's just say there were some premarital things going on with the young set. So John Vianney spoke about eternal damnation, et cetera. So he was pretty much hated by Ars, who had never heard a priest preach this way. So a bunch of townsfolk gathered up some nearby priests, and they wrote a petition, and they were going to send it to the bishop saying, please remove this wild-eyed priest who's a little insane from Ars, because he's a nutter. So one of John Vianney's few friends caught hold of this petition that was going to be sent to the bishop, and he presented it to John Vianney one day, and John Vianney read this petition that was seeking to get rid of him, and he read it with sort of swollen eyes, with watery eyes, and when he finished with it, he signed his name.
Oh, wow. Go ahead, get rid of this nutter. Sign. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just
humility.
It's just it's breathtaking. There's no so his friend read it and just started to weep and said, and really that was the thing that he showed the folks and the priests who signed the petition that say, this man is uncommon. There is holiness in him. He's not just a renegade. So that's one. The other, and maybe we can get into it, is
sure.
he was nightly attacked by Satan.
Wow.
Nightly attacked. Satan burned his bed, would yank him from his bed, constantly mocked. It sounded like there was teams of horses that galloped up his stairs, sledgehammers. I mean, I could go on about the things that, but the thing that I love for your listener to hear, and maybe a few will be familiar, toward the end of his life, after all these nightly assaults and hauntings, Satan finally said, you got the best of me. He said this through a possessed girl. He said, Vianney, if there was two or three more like you, my kingdom would be empty.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and that's, you know, but that's the whole thing. That's kind of why I've written the book. I don't really want to get into that unless you want to, but that's the whole crux of the matter, is we're suffering right now. I don't cast judgment on anyone, because I go to hell if I judge anyone, but we're suffering right now with what I believe to be a re-engineered ministerial priesthood that has sort of made things more comfortable, let's say, but also it's in the homes. It's in American homes. It's in the homes of the West. So until this comfort goes, like John Vianney never lived an hour in his life in comfort. And look what he did. They say he saved 85,000 souls, but the guess is it was far, far higher a number.
Well, and
So
85,000 at the time, but then, his legacy lives on. The amount of people who read his story and then have a conversion, I mean, countless, right? So that, yeah, that's fascinating. What, I'm curious. So I have a brother who's being ordained a priest in August. Thank
congratulations.
you. We're very excited. So what do you think is the most key lesson from the Kyrie of Ours for people who are going to be ordained or people who are currently priests? I know that's not necessarily always our audience, but they probably have sons and daughters, or yeah, sons that'll be ordained, daughters who might be entering religious life.
If your brother asked that question and he was right now on this podcast, here's how I would answer him. What's his name?
His name is Joe.
Okay, the future Father Joe. So future Father Joe, you know that there are snakes coiled everywhere in the West. They're in every corner. They're called modern heresies. So the way to address this implosion, this in this moral winter time of anything goes, is you must be like John Vianney in this one fashion, this one characteristic. You must possess self-emptying love. You must become like Jesus Christ, the starved man on the cross, who poured himself out with no consolations. Every blood was poured out because of love. He loved souls, so he died. So, future Father Joe, John Vianney understood this. So, every day he died to himself. He stuck his nose in front of the monstrance. He went to the box for 12 hours. He mortified his flesh through, remarkable ways, penances, mortifications. He took on the spirit of ascetical life. So, what does that mean? He wanted to save souls, so he emptied himself out. He just loved and loved and loved until one day he just passed away and died.
That's beautiful. On that note, any last words of wisdom you want to give our listeners?
Yeah, buy 10,000 coached by the cures within the first month, and then buy 10,000 more later. No, I do think so, Katie. I do want to say this, and I do strongly believe it. Until moms and dads listen to John Vianney, I don't care if they read the book or not. I'm just going to say it. Until they began to understand the burden of their identity, they are priests. I don't care if they blow it off or not. They are priests in the home, and until they understand what that demands. And that demands a death to self because they are the custodians of the souls of the children in their house. They can say, oh, well, we send Mary and Johnny to CCD and we send them to Mass on Sunday and they go to Catholic school. Well, you know what? That doesn't work anymore. Matter of fact, that's dead and gone. The CCD program in America is an abject, I'm going to say it, failure. It's been a failure for, it's like a carpool line where parents drop off their kids for First Communion and they don't go back until confirmation. And the parents don't go to Mass. It's an abject failure. So what's going to heal the church? What's going to heal Johnny and Amy? It's moms and dads who learn the faith, who spruce up on the catechism, who read scripture with their kids at night, who maybe lead a daily, a nightly rosary, or maybe even take their kids to a holy hour, a holy half hour once a week. Until moms and dads understand it doesn't work with Father Flanagan anymore. It doesn't work. No, what works is you. It works you too, me. And I speak to myself where I need to grab my children and say, hey man, I gotcha. You're leaving. You're leaving when you're 18, 19, going to college. You know, you can do what you want, you know, but hopefully I planted a seed or two along the way. So you're going to stick close to God until your death. But the way I see it, and I'll shut it down here, Katie, the way I see it in a way, and you know, maybe your listener can say, what a crazy guy Wells is. He sounds like Vianney.
Love it.
Is if my kid goes to hell, you know what? I'm probably going to hell too. And if I don't have a plan to get my kid to heaven, probably not going to get there.
That's a lot to ponder for everyone. So this is great, Kevin. I really appreciate this conversation. Hopefully people pick up your book and read it. It's Coached by the Cure. It's available now from Scepter Publishers. Where can they find you online or any place else?
Well, I'd go to kevinwells.org to find out more of my writings and works and books and talks and all that kind of razzmatazz. My books are my actually, yeah, just go to kevinwells.org and you'll find all the stuff you want and that you don't want.
Okay, perfect. Kevin, thank you so much for this conversation.
Thanks, Katie. It was great.